Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 923. The Obverse, Oswald, and the High Profile Hacks. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, subtitled Weighing In for the Truth and Confabanda, Part 2. This is being recorded on September 15th of the year 2016. Hi there, boys and girls. You know what time it is? That's right. It's time for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Yep, and in this one, boys and girls, we're going to be talking about how Eddie and his good buddy Julian Assange are helping Donald Trump. Isn't Donald Trump neat, boys and girls? He has orange hair, just like Ronald McDonald. Donald and Ronald. Yay! Well, as the introduction no doubt signaled to veteran listeners, we are going to be dealing once again with what I have termed L'Affaire Snowden. I've also called it Snowden's Ride. The intelligence operation for which Edward Snowden has been fronting ever since 2013 is part of what I termed in For the Record program 885, the Congo Line Ops, an overlapping series of covert operations stretching from the so-called Orange Revolution in Ukraine in 2004 through the so-called Arab Spring. I call it the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, through WikiLeaks, through the activities of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, an individual I have also called the Peach Fuzz Fascist because he is just exactly that, and the Obverse Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald, of course, was the veteran U.S. intelligence officer, and Snowden, of course, is just that, who was trafficked into the former Soviet Union and then repatriated to the U.S. and infiltrated into various leftist and pro-Castro organizations. People posing as Oswald did various things to set up his incrimination as the patsy for JFK's impending assassination. Oswald also was painted red, so to speak. He was given a left cover, and someone posing as Oswald went down to the Soviet embassy in Mexico City and tried to gain access again to the Soviet Union. It appears that what was going on was actually an attempt at linking JFK's impending assassination to the former Soviet Union, whereas Oswald was a veteran intelligence officer trafficked around in much the same way that Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden was trafficked around. Oswald was portrayed as a villain, and Eddie is being portrayed as a hero. When you look at Snowden and what in For the Record 891 and For the Record 895 I disclosed as basically being a CIA-linked network tracking to the Broadcasting Board of Governors. At the time when Mr. Wonderful Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden got the inspiration, unquote, to hack NSA and disclose their family jewels, he was working for the CIA. Jacob Applebaum, who appears to have been the person who facilitated Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden's journey from Hawaii to Hong Kong on the eve of a summit meeting that President Obama was going to have with President Xi of China. A guy named Jacob Applebaum also has been funded from those same sources. When you look at the so-called privacy advocates, part of what I call Team Snowden, they have, and the tools they recommend have all evolved from CIA. I have opined that what we're looking at here is the evolution of what Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty termed the focal point networks that he set up for Allen Dulles and CIA. These were networks stretching into other government agencies, including the Pentagon, the FAA, even the White House, that were ostensibly what they were, but they were actually CIA. So people could be at Pentagon, people could be at NSA, they could be all over the place. And ostensibly they would be working for whoever, but in fact, they would be working for CIA. I am of the opinion that the Bormann Capital Network, the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground, has over the decades infiltrated and, to a large extent, gained control of the focal point networks. Indeed, the Bormann Group and the CIA are historically very close. One of the points that I have been making in connection with discussion of the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook is that basically Snowden and the WikiLeaks operation are joined at the hip. They are, for all practical purposes, the same op, with Snowden's activities being a direct extension of WikiLeaks. And another point that I have made repeatedly is that whereas people are viewing this as some sort of wonderful, progressive, enlightened group of folks, in fact, that is the opposite of the truth. Both Eddie Snowden and Julian Assange WikiLeaks are big fans of Ron and Rand Paul, whom I termed in For the Record 756, and also in For the Record 758 and 759, the Palestinian Libertarian Organization. And these people are so far to the right, they quite literally believe in the viability and the justness of slavery. They are the antithesis of what people have been conceiving them to be. Assange is a big fan of Ron and Rand Paul. Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden is a big fan of Ron and Rand Paul. Snowden contributed money to Ron Paul's 2012 campaign. And the chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, Bruce Fein, was the first of Edward Snowden's attorneys and also is the attorney for the Snowden family, having set up a nonprofit organization in combination with or in collaboration with Lon Snowden, Eddie Snowden's father. One of the elements that tracks through all of this is David Duke. David Duke is an open supporter of Donald Trump. He also had been networked for decades with Ron Paul. David Duke had a Scandinavian speaking engagement arranged by Carl Lundstrom, who financed the servers on which WikiLeaks originally held forth, the Pirate Bay server. The person who made the arrangements for WikiLeaks to hold forth on the Pirate Bay server in Sweden at the same time that Karl Rove was serving as an advisor to the president of Sweden was Julian Assange's right-hand man, Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, a doctrinaire Holocaust denier who is in charge of WikiLeaks operations in Russia. He also is a person who is part of a both Russian and Ukrainian political milieu that networks with David Duke. Donald Trump is part of the alt-right network. I hate the term, but it's passed into popular usage. And the alt-right milieu has evolved directly from Ron Paul. And what we're going to do is to reread an article about the evolution of paleo-libertarianism and Paulistinian libertarian organization politics into the Trump campaign. And many of the things that I have spoken about, the links with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, the fondness of these people for slavery, for justifying the Confederacy, for Holocaust denial, and all sorts of wonderful things should be noted. We're going to be taking a look later on in this program at the framing, because that's what it appears to be, of Russia for the high-profile hacks, the hacking of the DNC servers. A whole bunch of information was released by WikiLeaks just on the eve of the Democratic Convention and caused all kinds of problems. Now, WikiLeaks is working directly with Roger Stone. Roger Stone is a longtime Republican dirty tricks operative who began working for Richard Nixon's dirty tricks campaign in 1972 and has a very unsavory history. And again, Roger Stone, the dirty tricks maven for the Trump campaign, is now working directly with Julian Assange.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
We're going to cover a lot of ground here. It looks very much like Russia is being framed for the high-profile hacks, just as Lee Harvey Oswald was framed as a, quote, communist, unquote. And it looks very much like Team Snowden, meaning not necessarily Eddie Snowden himself, but very possibly Snowden. And beyond that, WikiLeaks and the person who bridges the Snowden-WikiLeaks gap. There really isn't much of a gap. A guy named Jacob Applebaum, who again has received funding from the Broadcasting Board of Governors, an evolved CIA organization, a CIA-derived organization. And just as Oswald was painted red, we are seeing Russia being apparently framed for the high-profile hacks, and Team Snowden, WikiLeaks, Eddie the Friendly Spook himself, and Jacob Applebaum, who appears to have gotten Snowden from Hawaii to Hong Kong, loom large in these hacks. However, before going into this, I'm going to review an article with which I closed For the Record 922. Where did Donald Trump get his radicalized rhetoric? From libertarians. This by Matthew Sheffield of the Washington Post of September 2nd of 2016. Subtitled, The Intersection of White Nationalism, the Alt-Right, and Ron Paul. According to Clinton and many conservative intellectuals who oppose Trump, the conspiratorial winking at racists campaign he has been running represents a novel departure from Republican politics. That is not quite true, however. Trump's style and positions, endorsing and consorting with 9/11 truthers, promoting online racists, using fake statistics, draw on a now obscure political strategy called paleo-libertarianism, which was once quite popular among some Republicans, especially former presidential candidate Ron Paul. There is no question that the paranoid and semi-racialist meme frequently favored by Trump originates in the fevered swamps that Ron Paul dwelled in for decades. Skipping down, mainstream libertarians have been agonizing over this legacy among themselves for some time, hoping that either the elder or younger Paul would definitively denounce the movement's racialist past, but no such speech has ever come. I would note parenthetically that the guy named Jack Hunter, former head of the League of the South, a neo-Confederate organization, is a key aide to Rand Paul. He was Ron Paul's chief blogger during Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, to which Eddie the Friendly Spook contributed money, and the attorney for which the chief legal counsel for which Bruce Fine is now the attorney for the Snowden family, having been the first of Edward Snowden's attorneys. Going back to the article here from the Washington Post of September 2nd, instead, the paleo-libertarian strategy concocted decades ago as a way to push for minimal government threatens to replace right-wing libertarianism with white nationalism. The figure whose ideas unify Pauline libertarians and today's Trumpists is the late Murray Rothbard, R-O-T-H-B-A-R-D, an economist who co-founded the Cato Institute, parenthetically with which Glenn Greenwald has networked, and is widely regarded as the creator of libertarianism. Nowadays, many libertarians like to portray their ideology as one that somehow transcends the left-right divide, but to Rothbard, this was nonsense. Libertarianism, he argued, was nothing more than a restatement of the beliefs of the old right, which resolutely opposed the New Deal and any sort of foreign intervention in the early 20th century. Skipping down. There had always been some sympathy for racism and anti-Semitism among libertarians. The movement's House magazine, Reason Magazine, dedicated an entire issue in 1976 to historical revisionism, including Holocaust revisionism. It also repeatedly ran articles in defense of South Africa's then-apartheid government, though by 2016 the magazine was running articles like "Donald Trump enables racism," unquote. But it was Rothbard's founding of the Ludwig von Mises Institute in 1982 that enabled the fledgling political movement to establish affinity with the neo-Confederate Lost Cause movement. Almost immediately after its creation, the Mises Institute, headquartered in Auburn, Alabama, began publishing criticism of compulsory integration, attacks on Abraham Lincoln, and apologia for Confederate leaders. Institute scholars have also spoken to racist groups such as the League of the South. I would add that several fellows at the Ludwig von Mises Institute are deeply connected to the League of the South. And again, this milieu is the milieu underlying Eddie Snowden and Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, so it should come as no surprise to see Roger Stone networking directly with Assange and Team Snowden working for Donald Trump, which they most assuredly are doing. By the way, since we're going to be talking about the high-profile hacks here, never lose sight of a fact that has really been eclipsed in the vulgar political landscape in which we all dwell at this point. Hacking is a crime. It's a felony. Reminds me of the old Rolling Stones song, "Sympathy for the Devil." Just as every cop is a criminal and all the sinners saints. Well, that's where we've gotten. More about this milieu. These and many other controversial views advocated by Mises writers make sense from a fanatical libertarian viewpoint, but they also originate in a political calculation Rothbard revealed in a 1992 essay lamenting the defeat of Republican white nationalist and former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke in the 1991 Louisiana governor's race by a bipartisan coalition. Expanding on themes raised 2 years earlier by his longtime partner and friend Llewellyn Lou Rockwell, an editor and fundraiser for libertarian causes, Rothbard argued that Duke's candidacy was vitally important because it made clear that the old America had been overthrown, quote, by an updated 20th century coalition of throne and altar and its state church of government officials, journalists, and social scientists. Again, note that Rothbard argued that David Duke's candidacy was fundamental. Duke is now running for United States Senator in Louisiana and is openly supportive of Donald Trump. Besides commending Duke as an exemplar of the kind of candidate he was looking to support, Rothbard also invoked the exciting former Senator Joe McCarthy of Wisconsin, not because of his economic views, but because he was a brash populist prone to doing erratic things. Rothbard's description of McCarthy seems eerily similar to the campaign that Trump has been running. I would also note that for years, Roy Cohn, the chief legal counsel and right-hand man of Joe McCarthy, was the attorney for Donald Trump. Skipping down. All of these paleo-libertarian positions were offered by David Duke in his 1990 Senate campaign and 1991 gubernatorial campaign. But they were also offered by another politician Rothbard admired, Ron Paul, the Libertarian Party's presidential candidate in 1988. Rothbard and Paul had known and worked with each other in the 1970s when they came to know Rockwell. Rockwell would work closely with both men, serving as Paul's congressional chief of staff until he left to found the Mises Institute with Rothbard. Sold under various titles, the highly lucrative Ron Paul newsletters frequently stoked racial fears similar to what Trump had been doing this year, though they went further. One even gave advice on using an unregistered gun to shoot urban youth, unquote. Another issue mocked black Americans by proposing alternative names for New York City, such as Zooville and Rape Town, while urging black political demonstrators to hold their protests at a food stamp bureau or a crack house, unquote. And by the way, we have excerpted Ron Paul's newsletters on this program, including in For the Record program number 19, but in some of the programs I did about the Trump and Kampf Verbande. Continuing. The Ron Paul newsletters also repeatedly promoted the work of Jared Taylor, a white nationalist writer and editor who is today one of Trump's most prominent alt-right backers. Articles also featured anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and frequent rants against gay men. Skipping down again. In the past few years, however, paleo-libertarianism has been reborn as the alt-right, as a new generation of libertarians discovered their hidden heritage and began embracing racism and conspiracy theories. Many alt-right writers trace their roots to Rothbard. As one of them, Gregory Hood, put it, paleo-libertarian theories about race and democracy, quote, helped lead to the emergence of the alternative right, unquote. Rothbard's call for sovereign nations based on race and ethnicity is very similar to beliefs Trump's alt-right supporters express today. Well, yes, indeed. The point being that the milieu of David Duke, the milieu of Ron Paul, the milieu of Julian Assange, and the milieu of Eddie the Friendly, Snowden, the obverse Oswald, are one and the same, so the following should not appear as any kind of surprise at all. From Alternet of August 22nd of 2016, Trump dirty trickster Roger Stone, How Hero Assange Could Help Our Campaign, this by Adele M. Span, S-T-A-N, skipping down. On the C-SPAN show, Stone told Politico's Alex Eisenstadt of his communication to Assange, quote, through an intermediary someone who is a mutual friend, unquote, regarding the 30,000 emails the Clinton staff deleted before turning over the contents of the server to the Justice Department investigators. Clinton maintains that only emails of a personal nature were deleted. Asked to corroborate Assange's threat of an October surprise to stem from that probe, Stone offered a suggestion he clearly deemed to be more helpful to the Trump campaign. Well, first of all, I think that Julian Assange is a hero. I think he's taking on the deep state, both Republican and Democrat. Parenthetically, BS. Continuing, Stone began. He went on to say, I believe that he is in possession of all of those emails that Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, the Clinton aides, believe they deleted, that and a lot more. These are like the Watergate tapes, unquote. Stone knows a thing or two about the Watergate scandal in which he played a minor role, parenthetically, as a Richard Nixon campaign dirty trickster, before moving on to bigger operations such as the 2000 Brooks Brothers riot in Florida, where Stone organized dozens of Republican congressional staffers to storm the election board in Miami-Dade County, Florida, where a recount of presidential election ballots was taking place. I don't know that this is going to happen in October, Stone said of a potential WikiLeaks dump of Clinton correspondence. There is an enormous amount of material here. Mr. Assange could theoretically drop a tranche of documents before each one of the presidential debates. And again, note that hacking is a crime. I wonder if perhaps Hillary Clinton's email server had been hacked, maybe, but certainly NSA would have been had access to it, and whether Eddie the Friendly Spook and Jacob Applebaum got a hold of that information. I also wonder, one of the things that we noted in For the Record 733 and 734 is that Karl Rove, who, by the way, was channeling money to Bernie Sanders' campaign through his American Crossroads super PAC, was in Sweden working as an advisor to the president of Sweden, who was known as the Ronald Reagan of Europe. This at the same time that WikiLeaks was holding forth on the Pirate Bay server that was financed by David Duke associate Carl Lundstrom.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Very quickly, we're going to review some information about the DNC hack supposedly done by Russia. We spoke about this in For the Record 917 very quickly by Dr. Sandro Gayken, G-A-Y-C-K-E-N, from the Council on Foreign Relations blog of August 1st of 2016. Blaming Russia for the DNC hack is almost too easy, unquote. And by the way, Gayken is the director of the Digital Society Institute, himself a former hacktivist, and a strategic advisor to NATO, some German-backed companies, and the German government on cyber matters. The hack of the Democratic National Committee definitely looks Russian. The evidence is compelling, I would add. No. The tools used in the incident appeared in previous cases of alleged Russian espionage, note the term alleged, some of which appeared in the German Bundestag hack, skipping down. A critical look exposes the significant flaws in this attribution. First of all of the technical evidence can be spoofed. Although some argue that spoofing the mound of uncovered evidence is too much work, it can easily be done by a small team of good attackers in 3 or 4 days. Second, the tools used by Cozy Bear appeared on the black market when they were first discovered years ago and have been recycled and used against many other targets, including against German industry. The reuse and fine-tuning of existing malware happens all the time. Third, the language, location settings, and compilation metadata can easily be altered by changing basic settings on the attacker's computer in 5 minutes without the need of special knowledge. None of the technical evidence is convincing. That last sentence again. None of the technical evidence is convincing. It would only be convincing if the attackers used entirely novel, unique, and sophisticated tools with unmistakable indicators pointing to Russia, supported by human intelligence, not by malware analysis. The BNC hackers also had very poor, almost comical, operational security, or OPSEC. State actors tend to have a quality assurance review when developing cyber attack tools to minimize the risk of discovery and leaving obvious crumbs behind. Russian intelligence services are especially good. They are highly capable, tactically and strategically agile and rational. They ensure that offensive tools are tailored and proportionate to the signal they want to send, the possibility of disclosure and public perception, and the odds of escalation. The shoddy OPSEC just does not fit what we know about Russian intelligence. The claim that Guccifer 2.0 is a Russian false flag operation may not hold up either. If Russia wanted to cover up the fact that it had hacked the DNC, why create a pseudonym that would only attract more attention and publish emails after that? Dumping a trove of documents all at once is less valuable than cherry-picking the most damaging information and strategically leaking it in a crafted and targeted fashion, as the FSB, SVR, or GRU have probably done in the past. Also, leaking to WikiLeaks isn't hard. They have a submission form. Given these arguments, blaming Russia is not a slam dunk. Why would a country with some of the best intelligence services in the world commit a whole series of really stupid mistakes in a highly sensitive operation? Why pick a target that has a strong chance of leading to escalatory activity when Russia is known to prefer incremental actions over drastic ones? Why go through the trouble of a false flag when doing nothing would have been arguably better? Lastly, how does Russia benefit from publicly backing Donald Trump, given that Republicans have been skeptical of improving relations? And skipping down again. The DNC hack leads to at least 4 what-if questions, each with its own significant policy consequences. And skipping down again. If the breach and leak were perpetrated by a bunch of random activists using the pseudonym Guccifer 2.0, it would be the first instance of non-state actors succeeding in creating a global incident with severe strategic implications, demanding more control of such entities and a much better design of escalatory processes among nations. Finally, it is entirely possible that this was a false flag operation by an unknown third party to escalate tensions between nuclear superpowers. If this is the case, the party has to be uncovered. And reviewing another article, this from Defense, one a relatively thoughtful but obviously well-right-of-center defense-oriented publication, this from Defense, one of July 28th of 2016, is by Patrick Tucker. Russia wanted to be caught, says company waging war on the DNC hackers. Again, this belongs in the painting Oswald red, and it reminds me of Oswald, quote Oswald, unquote, at the Russian embassy in Mexico City. This just does not. This dog won't hunt. Some of the dissenting opinions that, well, Russia did it, but they did it in such a way as they wanted to be caught. What are you kidding me? But security expert Jeff Carr, C-A-R-R, thought the smoke of this smoking gun was a bit too thick. In his minority report, he asks what kind of spy ring tags their stolen docs before releasing them under a cover. Raise your hand if you think that a GRU or FSB officer would add Iron Felix's name to the metadata of a stolen document before he released it to the world while pretending to be a Romanian hacker. Someone clearly had a wicked sense of humor, he wrote, skipping down. CrowdStrike President Sean Henry, that, by the way, is a firm that was a cybersecurity firm that was working on this. CrowdStrike President Sean Henry is also dubious. I don't know what kind of foreign intelligence service conducting a covert operation wants to be found, he said on Thursday. But he added that CrowdStrike picked up the DNC hack within 48 hours and that it, quote, wasn't difficult, unquote.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
We're going to go from the hacks of the DNC servers to the hacks, or if that's what they were, and it does not appear to have been hacks, but rather someone who took purloined information about the NSA, put it on a thumb drive or flash drive, and basically took it from there. Now, one of the things to note that this, rather like the DNC hack, looks like the painting of Oswald Red. It looks like a deliberate and, frankly, almost clumsily humorous way or manner in which to frame Russia for this. And, in fact, the evidence doesn't look like Russia at all. I would note that the shadow brokers, that is the self-applied name of these activists, because it does not appear that they actually hacked NSA servers, more about that. They posted a reward. Basically, if you kicked in a bunch of bitcoins, you could get all of this. They engaged in an online auction. They used really clumsy, broken English. I guess I'm dating myself. Older listeners may remember the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon series. Two of the characters on that were Boris and Natasha, two Soviet/Russian spies. And the broken English used on this reminds me of Boris and Natasha. It really is. It's a bad joke. It's like the framing of Oswald Red in Mexico City. It was extremely clumsy. And this is very clumsy as well. It's kind of like, Natasha, have you set up wallet for our bitcoins for NSA hacked? Darboris, what do you think I am? Of course I have set up wallet. I mean, it is a joke. This is like Boris and Natasha. But what is worth noting here is that whereas the available evidence suggests not only is this not Russia, but it wasn't a hack at all, but rather purloined information that was put on a thumb drive and then subsequently released. Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, again, a CIA officer who was responsible for the leaking of NSA after he infiltrated NSA files, after he infiltrated NSA. Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden is saying, yep, this looks like Russia. And just like this, frankly, clown A blank blank S blank blank blank, where it says Russia did it and they wanted to be caught. Yeah, sure, that is just what major intelligence services always do. I mean, I'm being facetious, obviously. Eddie the Friendly Spook, currently in Russia, the last leg of his journey, having formally put an end to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's reboot with Russia. Eddie the Friendly Spook is saying, yep, this looks like Russia, just they wanted to be caught. And Snowden is not only a spook, he is a first-class son of a bitch and is a truly evil bastard. He is not, however, stupid. He is a very smart guy and very tech-savvy, and he must know not only this doesn't look like a hack, it sure as hell doesn't look like Russia. What Snowden's statement attributing this to Russia is very close to is the legal principle of consciousness of guilt. If you can be proved to have acted in such a way that points to your activity as covering up a crime, then you are indictable for that crime. And Eddie the Friendly Spook is very, very close here to consciousness of guilt. Now, about the NSA hack, a bunch of articles. I'm going to go quickly and sum up the basic points in each one. The Wall Street Journal of August 15th of 2016 has an article by Robert McMillan. Group claims to have U.S. government hacking tools for sale. Security experts doubt previously unknown hackers have access to NSA-linked cyber weapons. A previously unknown hacking group claims to have broken into a cyber espionage organization linked to the National Security Agency and is offering to sell what it says are U.S. government hacking tools. The group, calling itself the Shadow Brokers, said in an internet post on Saturday that it had full access to a, quote, full state-sponsored tool set of cyber weapons. To back up its claims, the group posted what appeared to be attack code that targets security software on routers that direct computer traffic around the Internet. In a post written in broken English, I'm going to relate some of that. It really is like Boris and Natasha. It's really bad. I mean, this is Russia behind this. You know, I'm an aardvark, okay? I'm an armadillo. This is a joke. Anyway, in a post written in broken English, the Shadow Brokers offered to sell a complete trove of tools to the highest bidder. The group said if it is paid 1 million Bitcoin valued at roughly $568 million, it will release the tools publicly. Security experts doubt that the group has access to the hacking treasure that it boasts, but several said the code it released appears to be legitimate. Skipping down. The Shadow Brokers' claims are still being analyzed by security experts. If true, they would reflect an unprecedented breach of a computer espionage outfit dubbed the Equation Group, unquote. In a report last year, Russian computer security firm Kaspersky Lab ZAO said the Equation Group launched hacking efforts against governments, telecommunications companies, and other organizations in countries such as Russia, Iraq, and Iran. Kaspersky didn't name any U.S. agencies in its report, but it appeared to detail the kind of work typically conducted by the NSA. Skipping down. In an internet post, the Shadow Brokers rail against wealthy elites, unquote. That's alt-right kind of stuff. The Shadow Brokers didn't respond to email and Twitter messages seeking comment. By the way, the wealthy elites and the alt-right, the Jews, yeah? You will hear wealthy elites rail that, you know, in and of itself appropriately around the political spectrum. But when we're dealing with Snowden and WikiLeaks, we're dealing with alt-right. It is the political foundation of Eddie the Friendly Spook, and WikiLeaks is the alt-right. It is the same as the political foundation of Donald Trump. Skipping down. Security experts who have examined the code published by the hackers said it appears to contain genuine NSA programs that could manipulate or redirect computer traffic as it passes through a router. The more we look at it, it looks more and more like a toolkit from NSA, said Matt Suich, S-U-I-C-H-E, the founder of COMAE, C-O-M-A-E, Technologies, F-Z-E, a computer security startup based in the United Arab Emirates. However, security experts questioned the ransom demand, saying that it was unlikely anyone would pay millions for the promised tools sight unseen. Security expert Nicholas Weaver believes the Bitcoin auction scheme was most likely a distraction to obscure whoever obtained the documents. Whoever stole the data wants the world to know that they stole it, he said in an email message. And as Sandro Gaken noted, that is not characteristic of the way Russian intel hackers work. Once again, another article from Business Insider Nordic from August 16th of 2016, an article by Paul Zoldra, S, Z as in zebra, O-L-D-R-A. Here's why the supposed NSA, quote, hack, unquote, is unlike anything we've ever seen before. Skipping down. Speaking of the shadow brokers, their claim to have hacked a server belonging to the NSA is fishy. According to ex-NSA insiders who spoke with Business Insider, the agency's hackers don't just put their exploits and toolkits online where they can potentially be pilfered. The more likely scenario for where the data came from, says ex-NSA researcher scientist Dave Aitel, A-I-T-E-L, is an insider who downloaded it onto a USB stick. Instead of a, quote, hack, unquote, Aitel believes, it is much more likely that this was a more classic spy operation that involved human intelligence. This idea that a group of unknown hackers are going to take on the NSA seems unlikely as well, Aitel told Business Insider. There's a long arm and a long memory to the U.S. intelligence community, and I don't think anyone wants to be on the other end of that without good reason. I don't necessarily think a million Bitcoin is a good enough reason, unquote. When hackers gain access to a server, they keep quiet about it so they can stay there. One of the many strange things about this incident is the very public nature of what transpired. When the hacker takes over your computer, they don't start activating your webcam or running weird programs because you'd figure out pretty quickly that something was up and you tried to get rid of them. The same is true for the NSA. If the shadow brokers owned the NSA's command and control server, then it would probably be a much better approach just to sit back, watch, and try to pivot to other interesting things that they might be able to find. Instead, the group wrote on Pastebin, a website where you can store text, that, quote, we follow equation group traffic. We find equation group source range. We hack equation group. We find many, many equation group cyber weapons, unquote, which immediately signals to this alleged NSA hacker group that they have a big problem. Skipping down. People sell exploits all the time, but they hardly ever talk about it. Skipping that yet again. Most of the time, an exploit is either found by a security research firm, which then writes about it and reports it to the company so it can fix the problem, or a hacker looking for cash will take that found exploit and sell it on the black market. So it would make sense for a group like shadow brokers to want to sell their treasure trove, but going public with it is beyond strange. Skipping down. So what is the intent? Listen to this, because this is very damning if you read between the lines, and you don't have to read too damn far between the lines. So what is the intent? If you ask ex-NSA contractor Edward Snowden, the public leak and claims of the shadow brokers seem to have Russian fingerprints all over them, and it serves as a warning from Moscow to Washington. The message: if your policymakers keep blaming us for the BNC hack, then we can use this hack to implicate you in much more. That could have significant foreign policy consequences, Snowden wrote on Twitter, particularly if any of those operations targeted U.S. allies. Particularly if any of those operations targeted elections, unquote. And that's targeting elections with hacks is exactly what we're seeing from Roger Stone and WikiLeaks. And again, notice that whereas this does not look like a hack at all, if you ask ex-NSA contractor and parenthetically CIA officer Edward Snowden, the public leak and claims of the shadow brokers seem to have Russian fingerprints all over them. No. Skipping down. Aitel also doesn't think that anyone is going to actually pony up the money required to win the auction, And that prediction is probably going to be right, since WikiLeaks claims that it already has the archive. We had already obtained the archive of NSA cyber weapons released earlier today, its official Twitter account wrote, and will release our own pristine copy in due course. So WikiLeaks already has it. National Public Radio, August 17th of 2016. Shadow brokers claim to have hacked the NSA's hackers. Skipping down. The auction is absurd and weird, as Wired magazine puts it, but the magazine notes that there's a, quote, growing consensus, unquote, that the files themselves, at least the ones released so far, are legitimate. Skipping down again. The code released by the shadow brokers dates mostly to 2013, the same year Edward Snowden leaked classified information about NSA's surveillance programs. Skipping down again. Snowden also noted that the released files end in 2013. When I came forward, NSA would have migrated offensive operations to new servers as a precaution, he suggested, a move that would have cut off the hacker's access to the server. Well, what Snowden has done, you talk about being clever by half, he's basically contradicted his earlier statement that this looks like a Russian hack. Basically, it looks more like a USB. But again, note that the files date to 2013. James Bamford, who has sort of been the go-to guy about NSA, had a Reuters story on August 24th of 2016. Commentary evidence points to another Snowden at the NSA. I would say not another Snowden, but perhaps a Snowden associate, such as Jacob Applebaum. Skipping down. Now, in the latest twist, hacking tools themselves, likely stolen from the NSA, are on the digital auction block. Once again, the usual suspects start with Russia, though there seems to be little evidence backing up the accusation. In addition, if Russia had stolen the hacking tools, it would be senseless to publicize the theft, let alone put them up for sale. It would be like a safecracker stealing the combination to a bank vault and putting it on Facebook. Once revealed, companies and governments would patch their firewalls just as the bank would change its combination. A more logical explanation could also be insider theft. If that's the case, it's one more reason to question the usefulness of an agency that secretly collects private information on millions of Americans, but can't keep its most valuable data from being stolen, or, as it appears in this case, being used against us. Skipping down. While the auction, unquote, seemed tongue-in-cheek, more like hacktivists than Russian high command, the sample documents were almost certainly real. Skipping down. Without a doubt, They're the keys to the kingdom, one former tailored access operations employee told the Washington Post. The stuff you're looking at, you're talking about, would undermine the security of a lot of major government and corporate networks, both here and abroad. That may very well have been why WikiLeaks has Hillary Clinton's emails, if they have them. Skipping down. The reasons for laying the blame on Russia appear less convincing, however. This is probably some Russian mind game, down to the bogus accent, James A. Lewis, a computer expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington think tank, told the New York Times. Why the Russians would engage in such a mind game, he never explained. Note that Eddie the Friendly Spook is saying, yep, looks like Russia. So if Snowden could not have stolen the hacking tools, there are indications that after he departed in May of 2013, someone else did, possibly someone assigned to the agency's highly sensitive tailored access operations. In December of 2013, another highly secret NSA document became quietly public. It was a top secret TAL catalog of NSA hacking tools, known as the Advanced Network Technology, or ANT, catalog. It consisted of 50 pages of extensive pictures, diagrams, and descriptions of tools for every kind of hack, mostly targeted at devices manufactured by U.S. companies. Skipping down. In fact, a number of the same hacking implants and tools released by the shadow brokers are also in the ANT catalog. Skipping down again. There also seems to be a link between Julian Assange and the leaker who stole the ANT catalog and possibly the possible hacking tools. Among Assange's close associates is Jacob Applebaum, a celebrated hacktivist and the only publicly known WikiLeaks staffer in the United States until he moved to Berlin in 2013 in what he called a political exile, unquote, because of what he said was repeated harassment by U.S. law enforcement personnel. In 2010, the Rolling Stone magazine profile labeled him as the most dangerous man in cyberspace. In December of 2013, Applebaum, as we looked at in For the Record 991 and 891 and 895, has received financing from the CIA, the same CIA for which Eddie Snowden was working when he decided to do what he did. In December 13, Applebaum was the first person to reveal the existence of the ANT catalog at the conference in Berlin without identifying the source. Skipping down. But again, he never named the source, which led many to assume mistakenly that it was Snowden. In addition to WikiLeaks, for years, Applebaum worked for Tor, an organization focused on providing its customers anonymity on the Internet. But last May, he stepped down as a result of serious public allegations of sexual mistreatment. Shortly thereafter, he turned his attention to Hillary Clinton. At the screening of a documentary about Assange in Cannes, France, Applebaum accused her of having a grudge against him and Assange, and that if she were elected president, she would make their lives difficult. It's a situation that will probably get worse if she is elected to the White House. In hacktivist style, in what appears to be phony broken English, this new release of cyber weapons also seems to be targeting Clinton. It ends with a long and angry, quote, final message, unquote, against wealthy elites breaking laws, but, quote, elites, top friends announce no law broken, no crime committed, then elites run for president. Why run for president when already control country like dictatorship? Da, Natasha. Is this Hillary Clinton? Is she part of wealthy elite? Of course, Boris, darling. What do you think? And guess what the email provider was that was used by the shadow brokers? From Forbes magazine of August 16th of 2016, Edward Snowden, Russia is chief suspect in NSA hack by Thomas Fox Brewster. Of the little information available, it's clear the hackers used an email address belonging to Tutanota, T-U-T-A-N-O-T-A, a German provider focused on security, to upload the data to GitHub, a secure German email provider was used. Note that not only Jacob Applebaum, but Laura Poitras, Glenn Greenwald's associate, also Sarah Harrison, Julian Assange's former girlfriend and the WikiLeaker, who got Snowden from Hong Kong to Russia, is also in Germany. So it was Peter Sunday who founded the Pirate Bay Network on which WikiLeaks originally held forth. And again, Jacob Applebaum is in Germany as well. So stay tuned. Again, this does not look like Russia. It looks like the painting of Oswald Red, and this is not to blow my own horn, but my characterization of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the peach fuzz fascist, and he is just exactly that, as the obverse Oswald is looking increasingly prescient, because this looks like the painting of Oswald Red. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record program number 9. 23, The Obverse Oswald and the High Profile Hacks, Update on the Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, subtitled Weighing In for the Trump and Confabonda Part 2. This is being recorded on September 15th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.